Excellent. Right. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. We were singing a song about God's grace. Have any of you been listening to the charts recently? Have you been? You don't listen to the charts, you don't, are you? Why would I bother doing that? I don't normally listen to charts because I'm 50, so I'm getting old. But there is. This makes those of you who are older feel even worse, doesn't it? But there you go. But the reality, there's a great song in the charts at the moment. Look out for it, because it's called Blinded by Your Grace. Have you come across it? It's a Christian worship song, by any definition. We ought to sing it in church. You could sing it in church, apart from the rapping bit, which some of you might have trouble with. But it's an amazing song, a lovely song about God's grace. Fantastic. Have a listen out for it. Blinded by Your Grace by Stormzy. There you go. Great name, Stormzy. So it's a really good song. Okay, now we're talking about God and how big and how wonderful he is. Grace is part of that, isn't it? His wonderful grace. But we're talking about all those omnis, omnipresent, omniscient, all-knowing, all-present, all-powerful, all those sort of things. And this week we're continuing that. And we've been talking about, you may or may not have remembered, we were talking about the idea that we live by circumstantial theology. Our theology, our understanding of God is very circumstantial, which basically means that what I'm feeling and experiencing now determines what I believe. So life is a bit grotty at the moment. That must mean God either doesn't care or doesn't see. So he's not all-powerful because he's not doing anything. And he's not all-knowing because he obviously hasn't noticed. And we let our circumstances dictate how we see God. Circumstantial theology affects how we see God, and it means we often end up operating on our own. That's the real result of circumstantial theology. You do it in your own strength. You think you're on your own, and it's not true. Now, today we're going to talk about him being all present, and it feels like the rest of this series, everything I've said before hangs on this one in a weird way, because if this isn't true, the rest is irrelevant, isn't it? Because the big question is this: what good is an all-powerful, all-knowing God if he's not here? What good is he? What good is it if we have a God who's capable of doing immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, but he's not with us? What good is that? For instance, if my son or daughter broke a leg and I'm out of town when it happens, what good am I to them? Really? So if I could focus really, let's jump straight into this, and you're probably going to need to find Psalm 139. Can you find Psalm 139? That really well-known psalm again. Dig that one. And we're going to look in Psalm 139, which last week was all about he's all-knowing. He knows me, he sees me, he knitted me together, he knows me completely. He knows when I stand and when I sit. All that in Psalm 139. Well, it's a great psalm about the omnis, Psalm 139. And this one's about him being here. God is always here. God is always here. God is present. In your specific circumstances, God is present. And that's what this psalm is all about. And we need him to be that, because if he's powerful, or if he's all-knowing, it's a little bit irrelevant if he's not with me, if he's not here. Okay, so he's not just here because we've come into this room. That's one thing to remember. He's not just here because we've come into this room. Or he's not just here because it's Sunday and we've invited him here and prayed that he turns up. He's not just here because of those things. He's here because he wants to be here. He's here, actually, because it's part of his nature. God in his nature is here. It's almost not a choice, because nature means you just are that. And by definition, God is here. God is always present. And the question for you and me is, how do I respond to that truth? That the all-present God is with me, that he is here by his nature. Last time we discovered how I respond to the truth that he's all-knowing. How do you respond to the truth? If God knows everything, what is an evidence in my life that I believe that to be true? What did we say? What was the one action you will do very regularly if you believe God knows? God knows. you'll pray. If you believe God knows, you will pray. You will pray a lot. You will be constantly going to him, talking to him, asking for wisdom, asking for clarity, asking for guidance, asking his knowledge to be part of your understanding too. You will be praying a lot if you believe God is all-knowing. How's your prayer life? Do you believe God is all-knowing? Then why aren't you talking to him? Simple question. But there you go. So do we really believe this stuff? But how do you respond to the truth? He's here. How does that change things? What does that make you do? Knowing makes you pray. What does knowing that he's here make you do? God is here. David puts it this way, and Psalm 139, that hopefully you found, talks about this. So Psalm 139, verse 7. I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. And this next bit seems a bit weird to us. It says this, if I go up to heaven, you are there. Well, duh. Yeah. Okay. We sort of, there's no great shock there, is there? That's because often when we're used to praying or talking about God, we say, well, God, I don't know why we do that. Do you know why we do that? It's not very theologically accurate. The man upstairs. It's not very theologically accurate because he's not just, and what is it? I mean, is it up there or is it over there or is it over? Where is it? So we do that quite a bit. You just need to say that is not very accurate. Certainly not what Jesus thought, because that almost says God's not here, is he? He's up there. So that's the wrong sort of term. But he says, if I go up to heaven, you are there. And then verse 8, he goes on to say something even more weird. And this is odd. Have you always wondered about this? If I go down to the place of the dead, you are there. He's talking about hell. He's talking about the idea of hell. He's talking about the idea of the underworld. He's saying God is there. Hang on. I thought that's where God wasn't. Well, we'll come back to that, all right? We'll come back to that one. He's got there. Verse 9. David gets poetic on us, and then he starts getting all... His poet, psalmist, comes out, and he says this. If I ride on the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the first oceans, even there your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. And he's saying, if I could ride the dawn as far as it takes me, the furthest ocean, I would still find God there. I would find God everywhere. He's all present. He is just, God is here. Wherever here is, God is here. And then he says, verse 10, if I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night, but even darkness, in darkness I cannot hide from you. To you the night shines as bright as day. Darkness and light are both the same to you. Now remember who's writing this. This is King David. And we know about this passionate man of God who is called a man after God's own heart. We did a whole series on that, didn't we? But we also know this man blew it spectacularly at times as well. And he's writing this. What does that remind you of? The episodes in his life where he tried to hide from God. And for nearly a year he tried to hide from God once. When he'd blown it. When he committed adultery and murder. Why is that significant that he's writing that? You know why? Because there's always hope. I love that. This is David writing this, and he says, wherever I am, no matter how dark my life gets, God is here. God is here. I think that's beautiful. But regardless of when David wrote this, we know that when David sinned, he went to great lengths to cover it up and to pretend to hide from God. And he did that. And he discovers, I can't do that. It doesn't work. It's crazy to even try it. God, by his nature, is here. And no matter what I'm doing or where I am, God is here. God is here. I can even live in the darkness, but it makes no difference to God. He is here. So here's... Oh, that was weird. God's on the drum kit, apparently. But there you go. It's probably better than I am. But there you go. Right, so here's the issue for you today. Whether you have, and this is particularly important, I think, when life is cruising and everything's fine and you're, hey, it's all sunny and the garden is rosy and the birds are singing and it's Julie Andrews on top of a hill. Maybe that's your life at the moment. We won't go there. But maybe that's your life. I suspect some of you are not on top of the hill singing like Julie Andrews at the moment. Some of you may be struggling. And this is for you. You need to hear this. Is this for you? Whether you have some self-inflicted calamity on your hands and you're living with consequences, and sometimes our life gets a bit tricky because of our own stuff and our own decisions and choices, or whether you're dealing with a calamity not of your own making, that's maybe been inflicted on you. Maybe somebody else is doing stuff that is making your life difficult. It's not your decision or choice. It's just happening. David just wants to elevate this reality to you. David wants to say to you, God is here. God is here. And we need to be really clear when we talk about God's presence in our lives, that His presence is always here. God's presence is never there. You ever thought about that? It gets a bit philosophical, but God is always here by nature. He's never there or there. God is not restricted, you see, by time and distance. There is about distance and it's about time. Over there. We're restricted by those things, so we talk about there. We're not there because we didn't make it on time. Or we had to be somewhere else. That's our lives. That's your experience. That's how you live. God doesn't live like that. God is equally near to every part of the universe all the time. He is so infinite that there is no such thing as future or past to God. They are irrelevant and do not exist, unlike you and me. There is no there, there is only here. In time and space, there is only here. It's always now to God. It's never then, it's always now. Because he's always going to be. Has that blown your mind already? So there's no, he is just here, he is just now. He's like the ultimate reality in the universe. In every corner, in every time, in every place. God is. God is. And that's mind-boggling. It's why David says there's no night or day. Well, night or day makes no issue to God. It's just here. It's just now to him. There is no thing as then or tomorrow or today or yesterday. It is the same to God. Time is the reality he created for us to live in. It's not the reality he lives in. So for God, it's always now. For God, he is always here. In my home, he's here. In your circumstances, he's here. To say God is there might be good grammar, but it's lousy theology. God is not there. God is always here, wherever we are. Because in him there is no such thing as time and space. How does that work? How can he be here for them and here for me all at the same time? How can that happen? How can that happen? It probably won't make any sense, but here goes. So we'll give you a little demo. I'm not going to pour it over the floor for a change. So there we go. Okay. I want you to imagine this bowl of water. This is a sort of picture of God, okay? Imagine it had no boundaries, no edge. It was just one huge expanse of liquid. You watch the oceans, deep blue earth, blue planet. Fantastic. They did the deep oceans the other week, or the open oceans. It was an amazing sight just to see an endless, endless sea. Felt like it was endless, didn't it? Imagine God is like that. Just no beginning, no end, no depth. Just infinite. Huge ocean. Imagine that's God, okay? So that's God. And we all operate with pretty limited boundaries as human beings. We have edges, we have corners and edges where we start and where we stop, but he doesn't. We live, remember, in this sort of cardboard box idea. We make our little cardboard box that we interpret the world by, and we're living in it, but outside is the real house, and it's so big and so massive we cannot get our heads around it. That's how we exist. We exist like that, in our little frame of reference, in our little cardboard box, thinking we got it sussed, when outside of it is this immense, immense God and immense universe that we cannot fully comprehend. So we're in our little cardboard box. That's the limit of our perception. So let's just pretend this is an endless ocean. This is God. This is endless. No height, no depth, just huge, infinite. And Colossians 1, 27, let me see if I can... Is it on the screen? I think it's on the screen. Oh! So you're not receiving it. There you go. Colossians 1, 27 talks about Christ in you. Do you remember that verse? It says, we've been singing it. God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is, here's the mystery, Christ in you, the hope of glory. The mystery of our relationship with Christ is that God is in, where is he? What is all present? He's in us. He's in us. Now, most of the time, you think of God being in you, you think of it like that. God is in me. That's wrong. You know what? When God is in you, it is like that. It is like, let's see if I've got a picture of it. You can't see that. It's like the glass is in the ocean. Yes, he's in you, but he's also surrounding you. That's what it is to be in Christ. It's to be immersed in the reality of God, who is in all places and at all times, here, now, and to be in him. And for him to be in you. That's what it looks like. For that glass to just be inside the water. That's what it looks like. And that's what it means when it's God is here. That's what it means. He fills us with his spirit when we decide to follow him, as we get as much of him as we can physically hold. But because he's infinite, we are full of him, but he still encompasses me. He is so vast, and his nature is to be here all the time. What am I saying? What am I saying? Well, what I'm saying is there is no possibility spatially of you ever being separated from God. There is no possibility of you ever being separated from God. God is around you now. God is here now. Just as that water surrounded that cup, God is here. The issue is not spatial. The issue is nature. The issue is not spatial. The issue is nature. He can be present right there next to you today. But here's the weird thing. That's the truth. That is the truth. That is the truth of what is happening in this room for every human being right now. And yet you feel a million miles away from him. Isn't that weird? But he's here. But sometimes you feel distant. But that's what's happening. But you're feeling distant. Is the issue spatial? No. The issue, actually, of why you may feel separated from him is nature, not spatial. The reason we feel alone is not because of his nature. His nature is to be everywhere present. It is not because of his nature, it's because of mine. That's why I feel distant, even though he's surrounding me. Some of us feel alone and feel that nobody understands because God is here in his holiness and his purity, and I'm here in my selfishness and sinfulness. That's why I feel separate. It's not spatial. It's nature. His nature and my nature feel different. So I feel separate, even though that's the reality. It's not a question of distance. God is here by nature. It's a question of nature, the condition of my soul. And that's why David could even say, if I go to the depths of hell, you are there. You are there. Spatially, you are there. There is nowhere you cannot be. But because of my nature, because of where I'm at in my soul, I feel distant. I feel separate. Maybe some of us are starting to realize the desperate nature of our condition, of our own sinfulness. The Bible calls it your sinful nature. That's why it's such a pain, this thing called a sinful nature, because even though the reality is that, you feel a million miles away from God, and your sinful nature will do that. And some of us are in a desperate need for God to replace that, what the Bible calls that old nature, with a new one. You know what? The good news? The good news is that's what the gospel is all about. The gospel is all about, isn't it? Replacing your old sinful nature that makes you feel separate from God, even though he's surrounding you. He's as close as the air around you and in you. He's there, but we don't feel it because of our nature and his nature being so different. And the reality is that when you come to Christ, what do you get? You get the righteousness of God, don't you? You get given that. In other words, your nature and God's nature become the same thing. Even though you may not feel it, you get the character, you get the personality, you get God's nature given to you as a gift. It's an amazing thought. It's an amazing thought. The beauty and wonder of the gospel is that God allows us to be in him. He gives us his righteousness so that not only can we be spatially next to him, but our character becomes the same. And when God looks at you now, he sees who? He sees Jesus. He sees Jesus. He gives you the one thing that allows you to feel close to God, not only exist spatially close to God. Jesus Christ, he sees the very nature of God in you. You're covered by that gift. You put on this new nature, which has been bought and paid for by Jesus. That allows you not only to be spatially close to God, because you can't not be. He is here, and he's everywhere. He is spatially close to everybody. But in terms of nature, now you can be close to him too. That's an amazing thought. The trouble is, even if your nature is the same as God, you can still experience a distance from it. So you are a believer. You have been given the righteousness of Jesus as a gift, not of your own. It's not your own righteousness, it's his. You've been given that. So it makes you, your nature and his, feel connected. So it makes you feel like, yes, he is close. But sometimes we still, even with that, we still feel distant, don't you? As a Christian, you ever felt distant from God? Sometimes we do. And again, it's because we allow often our old nature to be dominant. We feed it and we encourage it sometimes and we give it too much latitude and room in our life. And that's because, and then we feel distant because our nature and God's nature start to differ again. We put on the new nature that is Jesus. We feel close. When we take that off or when we stop operating like that, we feel distant. That's what happens. And the crazy thing is that when we operate by that old sinful nature, when we make silly decisions and do stuff that hurt us and hurt others, when we operate by that old sinful nature and our two natures get separated, then we try and hide, don't we? Then we try and hide from God, which is a crazy thing to do. You ever tried hiding from God? That's a really daft thing to do. You know, some theologians think that, they argue that when Adam sinned and God came looking for him in the garden and called out, "Adam, where are you?" They argue that God can't really be omnipresent because why would God ask the question, "Adam, where are you?" So Adam blows it. God turns up and he says, "Where are you?" They argue that God can't be omnipresent. He can't be everywhere at the same time. But what they don't realize is this. Why do you think he asked that question? Why do you think? Because God knows everything. He's all knowing and he's all present. He's always here. So why did he even have to ask the question, "Adam, where are you?" What they don't realize is this. God didn't ask the question for his own sake. He asked it for Adam's. Let me ask the question again. Adam, where are you? Where are you? God is here. God was there. He knew where Adam was. But Adam didn't know where he was. He'd chosen to operate out of his own nature, and suddenly he was a million miles from God. Even though God was in the room, he felt a million miles from God. Adam, where are you? It's the same question God asks us today. Where are you? And God has to ask that question sometimes, doesn't he? Phil, where are you? And sometimes we try and hide from God when we feel separate, when we're operating out of our own sinful nature, when we're feeding it and encouraging it and it's dominant in our lives. And sometimes we try and hide because we're doing that sort of stuff, and that's a crazy thing to do. I mean, Jonah tried it. How did that work out? Hide from God, run away from God. Didn't work out so well. Adam tried it. Didn't work. Saul, the Apostle Saul, he tried it. Didn't work. The Bible's full of stories about people who thought they could hide from God. And you know what they all concluded? You know what they all concluded? They all concluded what David wrote. Where can I go to hide from your spirit? Where can I go? Heaven or hell? I'll ride the dawn to the ends of the ocean. Everywhere I turn, you are here. You are here. Today, you could be hiding from God, who is right beside you, because God by his nature is here, and yet you don't feel it, you don't experience it, you don't think it's true, you think he's a million miles away from you, but the reality is that he is here, he is here. God, who is right beside us, wanting to say, please deal with this old sinful nature that is separating you from me, that is making you feel like I'm not here. But I am. It's not spatial. It's nature, your nature, that is separating you. Or maybe you stop trusting him at some point and let that old nature have more say in your life than the new nature. Maybe even as a Christian we let that happen. And God's standing right beside us saying, I'm here. I am here. It's a reality and you can't deny it. I am here. He wants you and me to trust him. Me and you, you and me. The old bowl of water. He just says, this is the reality of the situation. Submerged in the depths of God, and he's present. He's always present. He cannot not be present. It is his nature. It is who he is. He is present. He is here. And when your faithful trust meets God's amazing nature, he becomes all present. That's what's going to happen if you trust him. If you let that new nature be dominant in your life, you will always feel the presence of God. Not only know it's true, but feel it's true. And he will not be almost God. He will be all God to you when you trust him. When your trust and faith meets God's nature. And this is the one that's probably the most difficult to really believe. I think this one about God being always here, God being now, God being here, irrespective of what I'm doing, where I am, what is happening in my life. This is hard to grasp because you can believe he's all powerful, can't you? You don't know if he will, but you know he can. You can believe that even if he doesn't do it. You can believe he's all-knowing, and you can let prayer be that acknowledgement that God knows and that you don't. So you pray to him. But when you come to this one, it's often in the real pain and the real trauma of life that you have to hold on to the fact God is here now. And nothing can change that fact. He is here by nature. God is here. He hasn't abandoned you, even though sometimes you may feel like he has. And sometimes we then give in to the circumstantial theology. Well, this is what I'm feeling and experiencing right now, so he can't be here. But will you choose to have faith that he really is here in the midst of it all, that he cannot be anything other than that? And then any distance you feel is not because of spatial situations. It's not that he's distant spatially. It's that you're distant from him because of something to do with your nature and his being different at that point. Will you hold on to him despite it all? Because you know God is here. He really is here. And that's a challenge. That's the toughest one, I think, out of the three we've done so far. To believe that and hold on to it. He is here. He is now. Irrespective of anything else. That's just a fact.